Now, children are heading off to school this week, but many might not be feeling very rested thanks to bushfires and drought. Some might be showing clear signs of anxiety, and others might seem unaffected but not be behaving exactly like themselves. And this is something we might need to deal with more and more in future. Are we prepared? Tell us how children in your neck of the woods have been affected by this bushfire season or other natural disasters. What's helped them get through the weeks and months and years after those events? You can get in touch via Facebook. Rob Gordon is with us. He's a clinical psychologist who specialises in dealing with bushfire trauma. And Marjorie Ebbick is Emeritus Professor with the Education Department at the University of South Australia. She's joining us via Skype. Rob, Marjorie, thanks for joining us on Life Matters today.
Hello, Hilary.
Hello, Hilary.
Now, Rob, you've worked with communities for many, many years, from Ash Wednesday through Black Saturday and now in Mallacoota. You're working with one of the public schools there. What's on the agenda at the moment?
Well, really, the first step, I think, in a time like this is to find out how the kids are and what kind of experiences they've had. They'll be extremely varied, from ones who weren't here to ones who are right in the middle of it. And then to really see how they're tracking and create a kind of flexibility in the program to allow them to sort of settle into a hopefully reassuring routine.
And as we saw in the news, it ranged from being cut off by fire, the thick smoke for days, the terrible colour of the sky, maybe even being evacuated on Navy ships. What are some of the varied ways that different children with different personalities might react to those extreme experiences?
Yes, and you mentioned the air quality. There was a discussion at the meeting this morning about the poor air quality and what that means, so that it sort of keeps bringing it back. I think that probably to begin with, the children will be, and young people will be, greatly relieved to get back to some kind of routine. And we need to remember that most people have a capacity to put bad experiences aside temporarily while they do other things. And I suspect most kids will be right into the beginning of school and all the things involved with that. But really, the problems are more likely, I think, to show up as time goes by, where there is a difficulty of concentration or emotional upset. Some children may overreact to anything that reminds them of the fire, a siren perhaps, or extreme smokiness making people agitated. So I suspect there will be a slight lull in things as everyone settles into the new school, and then we'll start to see things come to the surface.
And Rob, how are the teachers feeling about having to support kids through this?
Actually, what I've experienced is that this is the job they love, and they're very primed to help their children. But actually, most people in Mallacoota are feeling that rather the same way. You know, they're struggling to deal with what they have to deal with. But there's a huge backlog of concern and anxiety in the background. And I think it's really having a place where this can be talked about and resolved as we go along that's going to be important.
Marjorie Ebbick, you've worked in early education for many, many years. What's your advice to teachers this week in all the places around Australia that have been affected by bushfires?
Well, Hilary, I think children will be very individual in the way that they will respond. However, many will have experienced a lot of trauma in relation to this. So I think the teacher's role is very critical. They do need to, if children want to, encourage them to talk, to express their emotions, and perhaps better understand what's happening. I think also emphasising that it is okay to feel angry about what's happened, and I think teaching children that these things do occur but things will be better in the future. I think encouraging children again to feel secure, to feel safe, and to be able to express their emotions. I think that, as Rob has said, that many of them will be resilient enough to cope with it, but there's no one stereotype, of course, as to how children will respond.
And when we talk about expressing emotions, that could be quite a spectrum of ways kids do that, couldn't it? From the very young child needing perhaps a non-verbal way to older children. Do we need to make different kinds of space for different age children to do that expression?
Yes, Hilary, I think we do. With very young children, they will often want to draw about their emotions, express how they feel. They may want to play it out in dramatic play situations in the dramatic play area. I think the teacher needs to follow the leads of the children, and if they are involved in some sort of dramatic play where they're playing out these things, not to intervene, but to stand back and to listen to the children. I think also with older children actually honestly answering some of these questions that they're going to have, but also they may also want to express in some way how they feel about it by writing stories about it. But certainly I think not dwelling on it if children don't want to dwell on it, but rather trying to move on so that children again, as Rob has said, will have some feeling of normalcy back in their lives again. I think that the kind of routine that is happening in all schools, particularly primary schools and for the early years, does help children feel secure again, because they know that the teacher is there, that things are going to go on, they can talk to their friends.
Now, we're talking with Rob Gordon, clinical psychologist who specialises in dealing with bushfire trauma, and Marjorie Ebbeck, Emeritus Professor in Education. Rob, we've heard some of the ways that perhaps younger children might react. Secondary age kids might be at that stage where they want to take on some more responsibilities and perhaps take an active part in the family's recovery. What's the best way to manage this?
I think that's not just with secondary, but my observations are that children at all levels want to help their parents out, particularly if they see the parents as distressed. And something that we see in families and children well down the track is really important to talk about at this stage, and that is that kids actually try to be good, try to help out, try to put aside their own needs if they possibly can, so that they can devote themselves to the family's welfare. And in doing that, they are often putting aside their own needs, like not playing, not asking for play dates with their friends, or teenagers staying at home and sort of working all the time instead of going and hanging out with their friends. If we let that develop into a pattern for people who have been unfortunate enough to lose their house, they're going to have a very busy maybe year or two, then we find that the child is really, or the young person has put aside their own development and their own developmental needs for a time. And 2 years to an adult's not that long, but really from age, let's say, 13 to 15, it's a very big change, or 15 to 17, it's a huge change. And if they haven't been involved in their normal peer group life and continue to do their sports and so on, then when they come out the other end, their life has lost a lot. And it's potential for them to have sort of feel they've missed out on certain opportunities. So one of the things I emphasise to parents is to recognise that play and enjoyment and all those activities that kids like to do are really essential for their development, and that it's really important as soon as possible to start factoring those in. And yes, certainly let the children help, give them responsibilities, but make sure that doesn't take away the fun and the enjoyment of life. And the same happens for the parents themselves as they're going through it. Everyone must hang on to what makes life valuable and enjoyable.
And this is all sounding like there's a lot going on for the kids who are turning up at schools. Marjorie, how well resourced and trained are teachers for helping children through events like this, particularly if, as Rob said, they're also experiencing those events and having to support themselves?
Well, I think in some ways Australia has been insulated from some of the disasters that have occurred in the wider world, where teachers are in fact being prepared to cope with disasters. So possibly teachers in their initial training have not been prepared for this as they're going to be in the future. So I do think it's very important for teachers to look more deeply at the socio-emotional well-being of children and to understand more about trauma and about some of these psychological happenings that can in fact have long-term effects on their personality. So I think there's a need to re-look at the balance in teacher education programs because it's always competing demands. There are so many things that you need to do in an initial preparation, but now I think looking at a very uncertain future really for many children, they are going to need to be adaptable, to cope with problems, to have resilience. So I think considering these things in the teacher education preparation of our professionals is going to take on increasing importance.
And Marjorie, is there a recognition by education authorities that there is a bit extra going on for a lot of teachers at the moment, that they will be doing a lot of practical but also emotional work for some students this year?
Oh, I think they do recognise that, and I think that our teachers and our principals are going to really give it the focus that it needs. And I think that the teachers, although they may not have had to focus as much as they're going to have to now, I do have confidence that they will rally around. I think that they'll probably need to work as a team. I think they'll need to often talk about children because we also have to factor in, Hilary, that it's the start of a new year, so that children are going to have to transition into a new class. For some very young children, they'll be starting school for the first time. So many children will be confident and will bounce along and will be happy about it. But for those children that have had some quite serious experiences with the bushfires, they are going to need extra help. And I think the schools will rally around. I do have confidence in them. But I would also like to say that some professional counselling is going to be needed for some children. And I think that the schools are going to need resources to cope with this.
Marjorie, I want to talk about the curriculum too, when it comes to the way we talk about natural disasters more broadly, not just the fires, but potential future natural disasters in Australia. Is the curriculum adequate to prepare new generations of children for what might lie ahead?
Well, I don't really think it is, Hilary, but I think that there's going to need to be changes made because climate change is here. And these things are happening in a scope that we have never perceived before. So I think we do need to look at the curriculum. I think also children are going to need to be prepared for emergencies. We can't be prophets of doom, but keeping children safe physically, but safe emotionally now is something that we have to consider. So certainly schools have always prepared for emergencies, but now I think the scope of it is indeed much greater.
And Rob, what are your thoughts on this? As Marjorie said, how do we get the balance right between frightening children with something that might be a relatively rare experience and preparing them for something that they may need to deal with in future?
Well, I think we have to recognise there are a lot of routine things that are very dangerous for children, like drowning and being run over on the road and snakes and so on. And we teach children that these are very dangerous things, but we teach them what to do to keep themselves safe. And I think we have to do the same thing with natural disasters. We have to teach them that fire and flood and wind are very lethal things under the right circumstances, but here's what to do. And what we've seen on this lot of bushfires is virtually no loss of life from the fire itself because people are evacuating, people are taking seriously the need to, not be there, not to fight what you can't fight. So in the same way, we can bring children up. And I think there is evidence to show that the disaster preparedness in primary school particularly is very effective. I've had plenty of stories where it's the primary school children who start to prompt parents when there's a fire approaching about what they should be doing. And so I'm very confident that the right sort of education, I think, is already happening but needs to be stepped up. It depends. It's most effective in a place where the fires have already been. The other thing I would say too is in regard to teachers and their relationship with the children, the thing we need to remember is teachers know their children best. They know them very well. They've often known them for years in different ways, especially in small country schools. What is not clear, I think, to everybody, including parents, is the knowledge I already have adequate for this completely unprecedented situation? How do I know whether what I would instinctively do is right? And what I say is, I think trust your own style and relationship and prioritise that, and then see what is not resolving. And that's really where we need the additional advice and support of specialists. But I think it's very important for people to have confidence that they have enormous capacity to help children and young people through. It's that relationship, I think, that is the central resource for resilience.
As we've been hearing in recent years and decades, some people and children are going to take a very long time to process these experiences and need that support for some time. Rob, you're in Victoria this week, a decade after the Black Saturday fires. Are enough resources available for children and young people there in the long term, in your view?
Look, there are two things. One is the amount of resources, and the other is keeping the conversation going. There's been a lot of people, you know, I've known people that I've seen earlier on who were only ready to start to address their experience quite some years down the track. And I don't see why that won't be the same with children. And we need to remember that children are developing. And if you've got a five-year-old who goes through the fire, when they get to be 15 and start to think about things in a more mature way, they're going to need to revisit that. So I think we need to create an awareness that the healthy situation is to keep revisiting and reflecting and thinking, as long as the conversation is focused around what things mean and what we've learned, rather than just regurgitating the emotions. So that's something that is, I think, very important for people to understand. In terms of resources, I think, as you mentioned in your introduction, been involved for over 30 years in disasters, and I see a steady increase in the commitment. And what I've seen, certainly with the Victorian Education Department, a very substantial commitment to give intensive support to schools, which is why I'm here in Mallacoota, and I've got colleagues in the other fire-affected schools, to give teachers an orientation about what they should be trying to do to help them take confidence in their skills and to understand what a role they can play in their resilience, and then where the specialists come in alongside.
I'd love to hear your thoughts too. If you have ideas about what's helped children that you know get through these difficult times, you can get in touch via our Facebook page and join the discussion there. You're listening to Life Matters. Rob, I want to ask you just to finish up with, do you think that this recent batch of fires has changed us as a national community this year?
Oh, yes, I think it has. Look, what I've seen observing fires and disasters over the years is that you could see there was a massive impact of Black Saturday, just really from the appalling deaths and death rate, whole families and so on. And I think that was a massive wake-up call. And since then, you've had this emphasis on evacuation and getting out. And the message is getting through. I think the difference here that I observe is the massive scale. And when you're down here in Gippsland, you know, I drove for 140 kilometres virtually from Orbost to Mallacoota through a completely charred forest, except for a few remnants here and there. And it's quite an experience, and to be aware of the enormous area, and that doesn't include New South Wales and Queensland and South Australia, that just huge swathes of country have been burnt. And I think that's just something that's so hard to get your head around, and probably one needs to drive through it like I did for 2 hours to actually realise. So I think that is graphically underlining that this is quite different to the usual bushfires. The other thing is people regularly say these fires are different. People, firefighters of 30 years experience. And I was thinking the other day that when I first started working with bushfires, they would talk about the fire in severe moments would crown, that is, the fire would get up into the top of the trees. But it's always in the top of the trees now. So it's like there's a whole sort of I think awareness of the of this, and yes, I think there's been a massive change which is only just starting to percolate through the system.
It's leaving its stamp on us in many, many ways. Very much appreciate your time today, Rob Gordon and Marjorie Erbeck. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Hillary.
Rob Gordon, clinical psychologist and specialist in dealing with bushfire trauma, as you heard, over 30 years in that field, and Emeritus Professor Marjorie Erbeck with the Education Department in South Australia. And if you find you are struggling with any of the things that we've talked about today, you can call Kids Helpline on 1-800-555-1800, 1-800-555-1800, or Lifeline on 13 11 14. They're always there, 13 11 14.